Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
As a professional sports person, I'm sure there are many different kinds of defeats. Richly deserved defeats that you can see coming a mile off. Defeats that sting a little, even if you know you were marginally outplayed. And then, well, then there are defeats like last Saturday's for Munster that must drive you absolutely insane. You play most of the rugby, you miss a couple of easy kicks, you deny your opponents on your own try line twice, only to concede a late try and lose by 3 points. Throw in the fact that the team in question is Leinster, and you have all of the ingredients for the sort of result that will spoil your appetite for a few days to come. It's all cool, though, because for many of that Munster team, they get to hang out with most of that Leinster team in the Ireland Six Nations camp, which begins tomorrow. Oof! We have Shane Horgan and Andrew Trimble coming up in just a few minutes. Welcome to today's Second Captain's Podcast. It's me, Ciarán Murphy. Hello, Ken. Hello, Simon.
Hey, Murphy, Ken.
Ciarán, Simon, how are you?
Good. And Ken, there is some distressing news coming from Stamford Bridge on this Monday morning.
Well, the news hasn't been confirmed yet, but it has come from Matt Law, who is the journalist with the Daily Telegraph, who has, I think it's fair to say, he's always been a glass half full man when it comes to, you know, Frank Lampard, how is he doing at Chelsea? And so when he reports, and I quote from his article, Frank Lampard is set to be sacked by Chelsea less than 24 hours after the club's FA Cup victory over Luton Town, then I'm afraid it looks as though the writing is on the wall or in the Daily Telegraph for Frank Lampard. Confirmation could come as soon as today after Chelsea players were told not to report to the training ground until this afternoon.
Ooh. Okay. That doesn't sound great for Frank.
No. It sounds as though it's all over. It's over for Frank at Chelsea. Just reading from Matt Law's article, Lampard had not sought any reassurances over his future and was confident he could find a solution to Chelsea's current predicament. That predicament again, losing 5 out of 8 Premier League games. Now 18 months into the 3-year contract he was given when he was appointed in the summer of 2019, Lampard overachieved in his first season in charge, during which the club did not sign any players, by guiding the club to Champions League qualification and the final of the FA Cup. They did sign Pulisic, didn't they? Didn't he arrive that summer?
Yeah.
They signed him and then he came in.
I would have thought so.
Look, again, you know, this is not the time to quibble. And then the rest of the article... That's all. I'm sure that there will be more about what an injustice has been for Frank Lampard. But the rest of it is about who could succeed him. And it looks as though Thomas Tuchel is in the lead. Obviously, as we were talking about with Raphael Honigstein just on Thursday, he believed that Chelsea had already spoken to Tuchel about this. Although Tuchel maybe had the idea that he was going to take a little bit of time after being sacked by PSG only in December.
You know how these guys are, though. A couple of weeks, that's all the time.
Yeah,
they need.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a
recharge the batteries. Question.
Even if you didn't, even if you wanted to take a bit more time, suddenly a job like this comes along. It's like, well, I could tell them no now, but really, is that going to come along again? And it's kind of a, you could see how it's quite an attractive job for somebody like Tuchel to take over a team. I mean, one of the richest teams in the world, a big club. Who also have bet heavily on Germans. You know, they've spent all this money on Timo Werner, Kai Havertz, and they need someone, a German whisperer who can whisper to them, ideally in German. And they've also got Antonio Rudiger as well, another German. So they can all march up to work at Stamford Bridge, pass that plaque announcing the surrender of the German Navy, which is just always used to catch my eye, the surrender of the German Navy. it's just around the corner from stuff. I think it's referring to the First World War when obviously.
Sorry, Roman. Who are these delightful chaps in the red jackets? Do we know who those guys are? The Pensioners seems like a weird name for a football, a nickname for a football club. But I'll go with it.
It is interesting, isn't it? Like how this could happen. Like, is this the kind of thing? And again, we don't know if Thomas Tuchel is going to become the Chelsea manager, but he could be. And just imagine him as the Chelsea manager. Replacing Lampard, the Chelsea Lion. And is this the kind of thing that could ever have happened in the era of crowds? I mean, I just don't see it. I honestly don't see it. Like, Chelsea is an interesting crowd in that they have, like, rejected managers outright from the very beginning. Most famously, Benitez, but also to some extent, Sarri. I mean, with Benitez, you know, he had kind of come from Liverpool and had been a rival, and you know, they'd say you can't sing "Fat Spanish Waiter" at someone for like 6 or 7 years, and then suddenly go, "Actually, you're all right." It just, you feel like too much of an idiot, so they had to keep hating Rafa. But Sarri, it just seemed like he wasn't really that type of guy. Is Thomas Tuchel their type of guy, especially when he's replaced Frank Lampard, who, as we know, overachieved in his first season? I don't know. I am missing the crowds. I'd love to know what they made of this. If you are a Chelsea supporter, please do get in touch with us. We can't hear what the crowd at Stamford Bridge has to say with one voice, but I'd like to hear from you, please.
Leicester-Munster wasn't the only big rivalry at play this weekend. There was also Man United at Liverpool yesterday, and Liverpool are back scoring goals, Ken. I mean, sure, they lost the game 3-2. But the streak at least is broken. Surely there's a sigh of relief, first of all, that they're back scoring goals, and then also a sigh of relief that they're out of the FA Cup. maybe that was the Liverpool reaction yesterday.
I actually think Liverpool did lose this game as opposed to Manchester United winning the game. Is that I know I suggested it, but
no, what you just told me literally 3 seconds ago was that both of those things happened.
Yeah, the two things did happen, it's true. But who took the initiative in creating the result creating the outcome of the game? You know, that's what
Liverpool grasped the nettle, took the initiative.
They were the protagonists.
The scruff of the neck and lost the game.
Liverpool were very much the protagonists in this 3-2 defeat for Liverpool. Now, you know, they say that football is a weakest link game. You know, as in your chances depend more on your weakest than your strongest link. So if you've got 10 quite good links and one not very good link, then that's the one that you're going to be thinking about at the end of the game. Oof, I wish one of those links had been stronger. And I think there was maybe an example of this with the easy thing to say would be Reece Williams. And you could say Reece Williams, you know, has been promoted beyond his ability.
And that would be true, to be fair.
Yes, and he reminded me at times of somebody who plays FIFA or PES for the first time and doesn't know the controls and just is mashing the buttons and keeps pressing the slide tackle button, and their players are just randomly sliding when the ball is nowhere near
tackling the referee constantly.
Yeah,
that's
sliding, right, giving. Yeah. And Reece Williams was doing quite a lot of this, and you thought, why are you doing that, Reece Williams? You should try to stay on your feet. You know, I think you can see that he's not the quickest player. And maybe sometimes a central defender who isn't very quick wants to be proactive, you know, wants to sort of be aggressive, let's say. you think I'm not quick, but I'm here kicking you in the back already. How's that? But you can be too proactive. And I think Manchester United were they kind of tormented him a little bit, you know, Rashford in particular, made him look foolish. But there were a couple of, the first two Manchester United goals came from, you know, kind of raking passes forward, which were missed by Liverpool defenders, and resulting in easy finishes for Greenwood and for Rashford. And then obviously there was a free kick. But, you know, I said it would be an easy thing to do to beat up on Rhys Williams. So we're not going to do that. Instead, we look at one of the, well, in theory, strongest links in the Liverpool team, which is Alisson. And ask ourselves, what did Alisson think he was doing on the free kick? I mean, it's a free kick for Bruno Fernandes. He's practically on the 18-yard line. This is very close range. He's in position to have a good wallop at goal, right? A nice wallop. And we do know that he likes to shoot. And I couldn't really understand what Alisson thought he was doing, because, okay, he's got the wall there. He's also got behind the wall James Milner in case Bruno Fernandes decides to put it under the wall. And so his options are to go over the wall and or to go to the other side of the goal. That Fernandes' options. And I don't know why Alisson seemed to be so convinced that Fernandes was going to try to go over the wall to the, you know, to his right-hand side, because his positioning suggested that's what he thought was going to happen. And even as Fernandes was about to strike the ball, Alisson gives a little hop as though to move in that direction and is then caught by surprise when the ball flashes past them on the other side, which I thought, why have you left so much space for him to hit that, the only shot that he can hit? Because if he's going to try to go to the other side of the goal, the ball is so close already that he can't go over the wall and then get the ball under the crossbar in without sort of chipping, you know, without chipping the ball in such a way that you can almost walk over there and pluck it out of the air, right? Why are you so worried about this shot? He can't hit it that hard or it's not going to go under the crossbar. Yeah, but like on the other side...
Hitting it over the wall and getting it to dip is, you know, a miracle free kick. Blasting the ball really hard so that it hits this inner side netting on the net is the sort of thing that you would back Bruno Fernandes to do 9 times out of 10.
Absolutely.
So
9 times
stand
out of
there
10.
And make sure that doesn't happen. And if he does happen to hit one of the great free kicks, well then, you know, you're beaten by an amazing free kick and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, you know, if he was there in the dock, imagine this was a courtroom. You're the judge. I'm the pompous prosecuting barrister. Alisson is there, the miscreant in the dock. And I'm reading out this evidence. He might jump to his feet and grab the edge of the dock with his gloved hand, still wearing his gloves, and shout, "But Thiago was there. If Thiago hadn't retracted his head into his neck, seems to be a big move among our defenders the other day, retracting their heads in like turtles into their shirts. Milner did it on the first goal, and Thiago on the third goal." And you know, to which I would say, okay, you know, maybe Thiago should have left his head in the way of that ball. I can understand why he retracted the head, you know? I mean, if I'd been standing in the way of the ball, I can't say that I would have retracted the head at the same time, but only because I don't have reactions of the quality of Thiago. If the ball comes at my head at that speed, I'm going viral. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm losing consciousness.
Santa's little helper just frisbee directly between the eyeballs.
By the time I regain consciousness, the image has gone a billion times around the world and been memeified like Bernie Sanders.
If anything, Thiago's reacted too well there. That's basically what you're saying there.
Right. You know, only it takes a really top player to pull to retract their head so quickly to get out of the way of a shot moving that fast. Congratulations to all round to Bruno Fernandes and Thiago. This is what the game looks like at the very top level.
Tons and tons and tons of football on this week. Full round of Premier League fixtures on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday of this week. We'll be all over it on the World Service, of course. So if you've not signed up already, why not do it now? It's just £5 a month plus VAT.
And Frank Lampard, obviously we're gonna, you know, we will have to talk in more detail about Frank Lampard. I mean, today, really,
I don't think anyone is under any illusions that you're not finished talking about Frank Lampard. So we'd be honoured to have you along with us. Last week, for instance, you'd have gotten to hear Ciara McGeehan's emotional tribute to her late coach, Gerry Kiernan, who died suddenly last week, age 67.
He was somebody that's formed me as an athlete, but more so formed me as a person. He taught me to believe in myself. Whenever I'd went through a tough time as an athlete, being injured, but also he helped me through so much more. He helped me through a breakup in university as a young girl breaking up with my first boyfriend. Jerry was there. He would ring me. I would speak to him every day. And we would chat. And I can remember him ringing and saying, "Oh, how was your day?" And I was like, "Yes, the run went fine." He's like, "I don't care about the run. How are you?" He had such a love for his athletes.
Thanks so much to everyone who reached out to say how much you enjoyed that chat. We're, of course, indebted to Kira for talking so soon after Jerry's death to us. She spoke really beautifully. We have an email about Jerry, actually. Dear Owen, Ken, and non-athlete members of the team. I'm just going to ignore that, Simon and Mark, by the way. When they go low, we go high. Whilst I didn't know Jerry personally, he did play a small part in my own athletic career. I was running the Limerick Marathon in 2014, and as I was on a part of the court close to UL, there were neither spectators nor other competitors to be seen. Fearing I'd gone off course and seeing 6 months of training and starvation, what a terrible feeling that must be. I hadn't yet changed to the Ken Early diet, he says. Going down the drain, I went through moments of anger and self-pity until suddenly, off in the far distance, I could make out the unmistakable sight of Jerry's hair. Like a moth to a flame, I got my second wind, and it was enough to push me to a PB. The thing that makes me think about him most is a quote I read in an interview he once gave. After a hard track session, he'd sometimes go for 2 pints of Guinness with his training partner. He'd look around the pub at the amount of alcohol being consumed, shake his head and say, "No Olympians here." It often pops into my head once I've had one or two too many. Another great man gone before his time. That email is from Frank O'Carroll. "No Olympians here." I like that. So, Simon, you have the Irish Six Nations squad in front of you, I believe. Is there anything I should be getting excited about in there?
Yeah, just in, 36-man squad. And the big thing is a number of players seem to have timed their return from injury quite nicely. The big one is that Tadhg Furlong's back. Hasn't played Feb of 2020 with back calf. So that's brilliant news. James Lowe also been injured since November. He's back. Ian Henderson was injured. He's back. Dave Kilcoyne, he only just came back for that Munster game. He's back in. Tom O'Toole. So our whole front row could be completely revamped, actually, with Kilcoyne, O'Toole and Tadhg Furlong in. Stockdale is injured. We weren't fully aware of that news. So the back three is going to change. Uncapped Craig Casey, Munster scrum half, he's in. No Luke McGrath, no John Cooney, and no Jack Carty. So Billy Byrne, Sexton and Ross Byrne ahead of him.
Yeah, I mean, even going on Saturday, and there was a bit of talk about it as being like a final Irish trial. It would have been hard. I mean, obviously, they're dealing in a rather larger sample size than just last Saturday, but it would have been hard to see Craig Casey getting in ahead of Luke McGrath based on Saturday. What did you make of Leinster-Munster?
Yeah, I think Munster are clearly still evolving, which is great news. The talent gap, I'd say, between them and Leinster is closing a bit too. The response to the Larmer try was worrying in that there was 3 poor box kicks from Craig Casey. First two really way too long. And that's not really his game, or so far what we've seen from him, it's not his game. And then there was the 2 knock-ons, Dale Ende and Tadhg Byrne, and their whole structure just went out the window and their self-belief went out the window.
Right, well, let's get into it with Shane Horgan and Andrew Trimble.
80 minutes is up because there's an incredible gun off here.
Yeah, my apartment's going to be stacked full of lads.
Probably 10 lads coming over.
For the whole thing, so it's going to be absolute carnage.
Absolute carnage. We'll be stacked full of lads. We've got to be 10 lads coming absolute over. Carnage.
Simon, I don't know what you're doing toweling off there. Keep that top off and hit that bomb one more time.
Right, well, this one finished 13-10 to the away team. We had one try apiece, lots of perspiration, not too much in the way of inspiration in the Munster-Leinster Interpro on Saturday evening. We have Shane Horgan and Andrew Trimble on the line. How are you doing, lads?
Very good.
All good.
Shane, Leinster may have gotten the victory, but it seems to me that Munster were the real story here. Just how did they manage to lose this game?
It did feel like that by the end of the game, that they seemed to have a huge amount of possession. But I think, you know, they never got out of sight for Leinster. You know, Leinster always tagged on. There was a couple of key kicking opportunities that they missed, and their response to Leinster's try, which was quite late on and maybe a little bit shocking, was poor. But you know, there's a couple of ways to look at that. Look at this one, that, you know, Munster left it behind them and weren't very good. Another thing, you know, I thought more so that I could see the positive movement on in their game. You know, it sort of ebbed away in the second half. But for a period at the first half, they looked as if they were hungrier than Leinster. They were bringing more passion to their performance. I actually thought their rolling plays, the way their forwards were set up, was much better than Leinster. And although Leinster became more dogged in the second half, again, very sort of professional-like in their performance, I don't think they screamed sophistication in what they were doing. They were just, again, like we saw with Ulster a couple of weeks ago, they just had, I think, in some areas, better players being more proficient, and that was enough to get them over. I thought Leinster really didn't play very well, so they did very well to come out of it with a win, and it did seem very, very professional, their type of performance.
Yeah, Tadhg Byrne was one of the standout performers, Andrew. Scored the try, won man of the match, but what did you make of his claim afterwards that Munster did enough to win it? Is he mistaking possession with dominance? You know, like, you look at the scoreboard and they didn't actually score from the 12th minute onwards, which you know, it's hard enough to say that you deserve to win any game where you don't score for the last 68 minutes.
Yeah, I suppose it's probably hard to be critical of his comments in that he's just finished the game and he's massively disappointed, and he's reflecting on that. I think I don't think they were dominant, but it seemed like they were probably the better team for long periods of the game, and I think he's reflecting that in his comments, which I think is fair enough. And he was just massively disappointed. As Shaggy said, Leinster, they weren't very sophisticated, and they haven't been that sophisticated the last few games. I think we're starting to get used to that. And I think if you were going to reflect on that game as a Munster player or supporter, you'd probably look back and think, it's not the end of the world. I think there's a lot of things to be positive about. I think they'll be very disappointed about, obviously, letting Leinster have that opportunity to score that try, having them on the hook for so long and then just never quite getting out of sight, never putting the game to bed. And then the way they reacted to the try was just, they just limped out of the game, and it was very un-Munster-like, and it was poor. But having said that, the gap has massively narrowed. I think a lot of that's down to Leinster just going off the boil a little bit. But I've seen a good bit more from Munster as well in attack and defence. Go on, Shaggy.
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think it's Munster playing better. Their overall game plan is better. I think they can still evolve it on further, and I think individuals can take more responsibility. And they can play the ball a little bit wider. I think that would be beneficial to them. And then the other side of the ledger is Leinster, and their game has definitely decreased in what they're trying to do. They're able to, and this is a concern for Leinster, I think it's a genuine concern, they're able to beat a lot of teams like they've with the type of performance that they played, or the type of tactics that they used against Munster, and that gets them over the line a huge amount of the time against the majority of the teams they play against. But I think the teams are catching up to them because they're narrowing down what they're doing. I don't think they're challenging themselves in the way that they can or the way they should be, and they're not exploiting the best of their players, and they actually aren't getting the ball to the best of their players. So a couple of things by that. You could see what they're doing in the 22 in the opposition. It's so one-dimensional. It's really boring. It's not sophisticated, and it's just trying to bully teams. Even when they win the penalties, and this is one of the most frustrating things for me, when they win a penalty, Johnny Sexton almost immediately kicks a high looping ball over to the open side wing, which is that there's, like, you've got a free play, use the free play, don't just hack the ball over to the winger and expect him to catch it. Or it's not even a 50-50. I think Leinster's conversion rates from advantages in 22 are really, really low, and this is something they need to look at. And so what they're attacking the 22 is an issue, certainly. And you know, I just think, you know, the Leinster's best players, and I was very excited when I saw any of their back three get the ball. I thought the Ringrose was excellent as well. they aren't getting enough touches on the ball. They aren't. Leinster's game plan is too dominated still by from 12 in to the pack, not 13 out. And I think it makes them a lot easier to play against. And Andrew is right. The gap is narrowing because other teams are developing the game, but Leinster aren't at the same standard as they have been.
Yeah, I think Leinster are contributing more to that gap narrowing than any other team. Having said that, Munster have got a good bit better. I think what won Leinster that game was reputation, history, legacy in that game. And that meant that Munster kind of just went into their shells. They got a foothold in the game very early and massive dominance early on. Then they kind of withstood that purple patch from Leinster, which was Leinster's best period, 20 to 40 minutes. And it looked like the Leinster of old, looked like they were flowing, they were linking, getting a ball into the hands of Ringrose and Armour, like you're saying. But then Munster, once they felt like they got through that, then they just did not put the game to bed and they tried to manage the game. And I think that's what you do against the side that you're so fearful and respectful of. You just try and manage your way into a victory, and you can't do that against Leinster. They have to keep playing. They didn't do that. So the two things on that, to switch over to Munster. Munster, their improvement was shown really in the first 20 minutes. I think that's all really we saw of what they're capable of doing. The last few weeks against Connacht, they played some incredible rugby. And that shape you're talking about, Shaggy, we can get into that in a minute because I think it's really interesting. And I would assume it's the Stephen Larkin impact there with the two forwards and just slowing. Look like they're almost tricking the defence into slowing the ball down and then just pulling it out the back of the second forward, not the first forward, which is a little bit different, but Munster are doing you know a lot of things really well and look quite fluid and look quite confident. They showed that in the first 20 minutes, and then the second 20 minutes whenever Leinster had that purple patch, when Leinster have that in the past, they always score, and they didn't this time. And I think that shows how dominant Munster are and how good they are defensively. Now granted, there was that kind of that 3 points that they got at the end of the game, but it just didn't look like the Leinster of old, and Munster looked like they were totally renewed in what they were doing in defence.
And I think the other thing, that Leinster haven't had to evolve their game plan in the way the other teams have had to evolve their game plan to catch up with Leinster. Actually, Leinster have been able to reduce their game plan. And in many ways, you know, we've all been, or myself and Andrew have been on teams before where, you know, the coach will say, well, if something's going well for you, just keep on doing the simple thing over and over and take the yards. And Leinster executed many, you know, simple things and have done very well of them. But they were always a bit more than that. You know, I think their you know, the rucking game was so fast that they had a tempo in their play, and that allowed them to play the ball a little bit wider. I think that, you know, some of the tempo has gone out of the game actually, and they, you know, their offloading game has reduced a little bit. And they are playing a bit narrower, both in their carries and especially in their pick and goes. And I suppose it's because they've had success after success after success. And when you're getting yards in those easier areas, then something else might seem a little bit unworthy of risk. But the problem is, if you don't practice those skills, then actually they wither. And you know, I'm not saying Leinster are in that position at the moment, but they do need to sort of reboot themselves and think about challenging and making the most of their undoubted talent. Because again, this is sort of contradictory to what I'm about to say now. Is half of that, I was incredibly excited by some of the Leinster play when I thought Ringrose, Hugo Keenan, Larmer, although, you know, he was had a bit of a shocker under the high ball, but when ball in hand, and O'Brien, I found them incredibly exciting. I thought, why isn't Leinster developing a game plan to make sure these guys get as many touches as possible? Because they're electric.
Yeah, just to go back to that kind of stasis that you're painting the picture of from Leinster's point of view. I mean, if I'm a non-Leinster fan listening to that, there is a, you know, I'd kind of be asking myself, like, geez, like, these guys have been dominating the league and now it's kind of like Leinster are playing badly and it's still the league's fault. Like, I'm kind of interested by that, Shane, in some ways, because, you know, if you're describing a situation that a manager does, or a coach wants to be in, it's like, if you keep winning and you're much better than all the other teams in the league. I mean, it's really, really easy in that situation to keep developing because the risk is minimal. You know, like you play badly, you still win. So, I mean, I wouldn't want to kind of be giving Leinster kind of a free shot on the, you know, sort of making excuses for their regression on the back of the league, because they have no excuse. Like, you know, they're winning all these games. They're winning this league in a canter most years. Surely that makes it easier for them to push on, not harder.
Well, I suppose the point is they're still winning this league in this year, and we're probably highlighting, you know, we're having this conversation after they've won an away game to Munster, who are probably the toughest away game
in the league. Yeah,
away game in the league. So, they are at such an elevated status because of their success over the last number of years that I suppose we do critique them on a different level, and I suppose that's the situation that we're diving into here. Not that you know they haven't got enough to get to the semi-finals and win this league. I think there's you know every chance of that. Really where we're what we're looking at here is, are the gaps narrowing between Leinster as a, you know, the formidable team that are, you know, top of the league and win it, you know, every year for the last I don't know how many, and added to that, if this was a normal European year, which it's not, what would their chances be like to win the tournament this year in Europe, playing the way they are? And I think it's a little bit reduced this year as a result of it.
Yeah, I don't think this game transcends Pro 14 anyway, and I'm not sure the league plays into how Leinster, and even the way Stuart Lancaster speaks in press conferences and every time you hear from him, he just has so much ambition. He's all about progression. It just doesn't fit the picture for me that Leinster would stall their game plan in any way or be told to carry on doing what you're doing just because it's winning. But maybe we'll see how that changes over the season, particularly as they play the more important games. But I wanted to ask about the Munster 10 situation, which is going on years and years and years now, where they just don't have a 10 they completely trust. And I've heard, it was Eddie O'Sullivan in the past said he'd much rather have a 10 that kicked, you know, 65%, say that's a low percentage, but say 70% of his kicks in every game, rather than a guy that had hit 100 and then 33%. And just what it does to the rest of the team when JJ can miss those easy kicks and then the next day be brilliant. Shane, playing behind, you were almost always behind really good 10s actually, so maybe you don't have much of that clarity from your playing career, but what must it do for the Munster players at the moment?
Yeah, you obviously forget my early years in Leinster. we had a bit of a mixed bag there for quite a long time.
I was thinking of Ireland actually, yeah.
A lot of shade thrown there. Like a lot of
and all my ex-colleagues that I've ripped to pieces. But no, you're right. I was lucky to play with tens. But those examples that you used, though, I don't think either of them are ideal. Maybe, you know, Eddie would want to kick her up around, you know, 85% as opposed to, you know, the extreme echelons. But, you know, I understand where he's coming from. And the reason that I may be coming from that is because you don't know when that's going to misfire, you know, and it misfire really badly. So you misfire really badly in a really big game. Your 10, you know, has a hack, and you know has a game of hacks. Then there's no real way you can win the game when that happens. But a 10 misses a kick as 10s miss kick. It's not necessarily the end of the world, and you can regroup. But when you have that sort of hanging over your head that my 10 could have an absolute, you know, shocker, and we could miss 3-4 kicks, that's very hard to. It's hard that it doesn't get into the team's mindset, but also it must be hanging over the coach, which is difficult. But you know, I think the JJ situation, you know, kicking wise, it is an issue for him, and it has been right the way through, and it's unfortunate because I'm one of his biggest advocates. I think the way they're playing at the moment is perfect for him. I periodically ask where Joey is and what his fitness level is, because you know I would absolutely love to see them two play together at 10 and 12.
He was on the pitch on Saturday at least, not yeah with boots on, but yeah, yeah.
But you know, so I think there's the way JJ plays, I think is could be really really good for Munster. I think he since O'Gara left, I think he's by far the best 10 that they've had. Even when he left, I always thought he was better than what they had there. He tacks the ball flat. He's exciting. He knows how to pass, and his option taking is good. But you know, he does still blow hot, a little bit hot and cold, and that's not just with the kicking off the tee either. He does either drift in and out of games, but more likely he's in a game entirely or he's out of a game entirely. And I suppose that's maybe what you were speaking about with a kicking game, which is a big issue as well, and doesn't allow for a consistency of results that you would see would bring a team through to win a championship.
It changes everything whenever you've got a 10 who kicks goals that you can completely trust, because it just means you can play a little bit more rugby in round halfway. I know, Shaggy, you've touched on this a little bit, playing a few phases before putting into the corner. But if you feel like you're an attack who can just put teams under pressure, maybe not make a massive bust, but just play two or three more phases because you might pick up a penalty and then just get a real cheap 3 points, there's a lot to be said for that, and it can completely change the way a team approaches the game. It is tough to give JJ a hard time whenever, like, not so long ago he was the hero in Claremont, 9 from 9. And I don't know if this is something that's kind of typical of his game, that's up and down, but if you get the credit whenever you get 9 from 9 and you're the hero, then whenever you miss a kick like that, then you gotta pay the price. And it was something that kind of definitely directed the rest of the game anyway.
Both lineouts were erratic, Andrew. And the truth is, there's probably no hooker in Ireland playing with a whole lot of confidence at the moment. Between Herring, Scannell, Cronin, Kelleher, Dave Heffernan, there's none of them really playing all that well. But Rob Herring will probably start for Ireland because he's marginally the best thrower. I would say, last Saturday, looking at that facet of the game from an Irish perspective, it wouldn't give you a whole lot of confidence.
No, it won't, and it's definitely a worry. I think I thought the game at the weekend there was pretty high quality. First half especially was pretty high quality. Second half dropped off a little bit, but then the kind of glaring disappointment of the game was the quality of the lineout. It was poor. As you say, Rob Herring is probably going to get it just because no one's caught up with him. I think he's gone okay. He's the guy in the box seat, and no one else has said, I'm going to take your position off you. Rather than him having outstanding performances, he's gone all right. But I think you're right. It's a little bit of a worry going into Six Nations.
It's one of the areas that we aren't particularly strong on. And actually, the game a couple of weeks ago, we never got to talk about it. Was the Leinster Ulster game. We never got to speak about Cronin's performance that day, which he was absolutely phenomenal. He was just
brilliant.
So powerful. And as I was watching it, I know he's had a good career in that he has won so much with Leinster, and he's had success with Ireland. But he could have been, if he had his darts right, he could have been one of Ireland's best ever twos. He was, he just has something else to his game. His power, explosiveness. He reminded me of Woody, but actually even more, powerful in some ways than Woody. Even more explosive, able to bump people off. Absolutely had decent sidestep. Used to get so often find himself down the short side, tearing up the touchline and always kind of aware of who's inside him as well. We never really got to see him. He should have been, a British Lions starter, I think. And it's just a shame for him that he never really got his darts right. And to that point, I don't think he's going to be picked, certainly for this Six Nations. And I do think it will probably be Herring, because line out ball for Ireland, like any team, is so unbelievably fundamental that what and I don't think Herring offers a huge amount around the park, and there's probably three hookers that are better around the park than him, in my opinion. But he is that bit better at the darts, and you know, because of that, you know, it's first up, and you have to be able to do your basics right, and especially with Paulie coming in, I'm sure he'll be going, we need to have a, you know, an exemplary line out from the start of this Six Nations, and then we will, you know, we will build on it and we build elements on it, but first off, make sure that we get all our own line out balls somewhere. It doesn't have to be off the tail, it doesn't have to be off the tail and off the top, any of those things, but we're getting our ball. And you know, a crucial part of that is a hooker that you have confidence in their throw.
Maybe now's the time, though. Obviously, it's difficult for a hooker. Whenever a hooker runs too fast, it's dangerous for them, because the obvious conclusion to come to is that he's incredible in the loose, but he struggles at set piece.
Yeah.
It's flawed so genius. Bad. Yeah. It's so unfair, but it looks more it's obvious binary. Whenever that's the game.
Yeah.
It is, exactly. But maybe now's the time, as you're saying, lads. You know, not that no other hookers are really putting their hand up. No other lineout is really functioning really well in Ireland. So maybe now's the time to say, well, we would go for someone who was more tried and tested, someone who we could rely on for set piece, for their darts. But no one else is doing that anyway, so we may as well go with Sean Crowley.
Play Will Connors at two. Yeah, why not?
Paul O'Connell will probably have a huge say over that, right? Even though he's new, it's his job.
Yeah, I think he'll have some input, but I don't think he'll be picking the pack, for example. You know, even though he's I don't think it'll split down those lines. I think it will be, you know, what's your opinion? Who's going well? But ultimately, Andy Farrell will be making that decision. I think he'll have a big influence, and he should. And I think Ireland will be better if he does have an influence in it. But probably long term, it's Kelleher, isn't it?
I think he'd have a huge influence, Shaggy. I think if Andy Farrell turns around to Paulie and asks him for advice on something, if Paulie gives him his advice and suggests he picks someone, I think that would be massively significant. Do you not in that setup
but also the head man is the head man, and I think he will have his own idea of you know of who he thinks is good and their abilities and who will match his game plan. And I suppose that's one of the elements that about this appointment that is a little bit tricky, because you're right, and the force that you say that is because we know that, you know, Paulie's opinion to be so respected, but I don't think it'll be the case of Andy Farrell handing over the you know, keys to selection to Paulie and going, this is, you know, Paulie goes, this is the team or the forward pack we should be selecting, and Andy just going, yes. I think Andy would want to keep control of that area, and certainly, you know, take input from Paulie, and you know, I think that input with further success with what Paulie's doing will, I suppose, you know, gather momentum, and there may not be a huge amount of difference in opinion. But starting off, I still think it'll be Andy calling the shots, even in the pack.
Andrew, I thought Conor Murray was really good. I thought Henshaw was good. Ringrose, Larmer in attack, obviously. How many players do you feel are in good form in an Irish context at the moment?
Yeah, good few, and it's more remarkable, especially for Ringrose, first game back, and he looked really assured straight away. Jordan Larmer, second game, and he looks good too. The high balls for him is a little bit of a worry, especially then when you step up to a test match, especially against Wales, it's going to be difficult. Now, to be fair to him, Earlsey chased really hard a few of them and got his hand in, and Earlsey wasn't looking to compete to take the ball. He was just looking to disrupt, so it's really difficult to be accurate in that case. But he did enough with ball in hand to have a good performance. Yeah, I think there's a lot of guys putting their hands up. Hugo Keenan went really well as well. Certainly in the backs anyway, there's enough guys playing good rugby in the form of their lives. Murray is a good example there, where he's really bounced back the last few weeks. I don't know if that vindicates Farrell for kind of putting trust in him whenever he was having a little bit of a dip. I'm not sure what I think about that, whether that's right or not, or whether that period he maybe shouldn't have been playing and just wait for him to come good again and then pick him again. But Murray's back going really, really well, and there's a, like he adds so much when he's confident. And you can see he's confident because he's carrying ball himself, and there's more opportunities and more shape around their attack, so it gives him more space as well. So it all kind of helps each other. In the pack, strangely, I thought Keelan Doris had a little bit of an off day at the weekend. And when do we ever say that? He almost never gets mentioned because he's consistently incredibly good. He's boringly good all the time. And it was just one of those ones, like the penalty he gave away just before halftime was bizarre. It just looked a little bit pedestrian, very, very unlike him. I'm sure that's just a blip, but I'm sure he's going to be as consistently good as he has been for a long period.
Yeah, I'd say the other person that you sort of reinforced how good he was, maybe not at after post-match interviews, but in general, at the game was Tadhg Byrne. And again, he's kind of another one of my, I'm kind of a big fan of his, you know, in just his whole philosophy and the way he plays the game. But I would have thought, you know, especially before Christmas, that he would have been more in the you know, mind of Andy Farrell. But it seemed to me, and there was a couple of comments, I think he even spoke about comments that were made to him, that, you know, he was quite a bit off. So I don't know if that's changed as a result of performances over the last few weeks, but and injuries to Henderson. But you know, I would really love to see him play in the second row along with James Ryan, because I think he gives you so much. I think, you know, especially if you get, you know, Paulie's in, he's tightening up the line out, he's tightening up the scrum. Then you've got this guy who's an excellent carrier. His timing is very good. I thought the Munster forward's timing off multi-phase is much better than Leinster's at the moment. And like a little bit concerning for Leinster that their timing was so bad. They're static again, taking the ball and then hoping a latch or just power drives in through. Munster were more rolling onto it, you know, taking the ball with momentum, and as a result, you know, getting easier yards. But he's a very good carrier, and he's just phenomenal over the ball. He's a very good passer as well. And again, that was, I think, an area that the Munster forwards looked more comfortable than the Leinster forwards in the way they passed the ball. They all were moving forward when they're passing the ball, whereas Leinster were much more static, standing and delivering. So he has the sort of constituent parts to play kind of any sort of way you want. And I don't really know, you know, what he's missing in order not to be, you know, taking up that place as the second row.
Okay, well, thanks a million for that, Shane Horgan, Andrew Trimble. Chat to you soon, lads.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks a million, lads.
Just a crying big baby.
But you cannot call it a player. A baby. Coach!
Coach!
Coach! This is the game you wanted to victory, but it didn't happen. What happened?
I want victory for every game.
Where do you think you got it all wrong today?
Coach! This is the game you wanted to victory, but it didn't happen. What happened?
Well, it's just the nervousness.
You look frustrated on the
Coach!
Pitch.
This is the game you wanted to victory, but it didn't happen. What happened?
You wanted victory.
Well, I wanted victory.
Coach, is the game you wanted victory, but it didn't happen. What happened?
Where do you think you got it all wrong today?
Won against them in the Premiership, and we never said they are baby.
He's just a crying big baby.
And you cannot call a player a baby.
We'll have more reaction to Frank Lampard on tomorrow's show. It's all coming up Glazers at the moment, as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be the first team to play in and host the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. They'll be facing the Kansas City Chiefs, and we have US Murph on with us this week as well. Television's own McDevitt will be back with us tomorrow. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Kieran.
Thank you, Simon.
Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you, Ken.
Well done, lads. And we'll chat to you on the World Service tomorrow and all week. Thanks a million for listening.
This is his exquisite self-pity as he's like, I can't, you know.
What are you saying? What did you just inflict on us there? What were you singing?
Pia Jesu. Pia Jesu. Quidolis que peccata mundi dona eis requiem. to Requiem. And then Jody Morris is like, boss, boss, you know, what are we going to do? And he's like, oh, he breaks out of this dream. But like, can you believe that what they're doing to Lampard?
It's the second time it's gone off. They never go home, they never go home, they never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.